All right, a little Locked On 49ers, Locked On Eagles crossover podcast. I'm happy to be joined by Michael Kist and Ben Solek. How you fellas doing today?
We're doing great. This is going to be a humbling experience for me. As always, you know, the best co-host in the game. I am humbled by him every day in his extreme knowledge. And then someone else with you, Brian, who I have great respect for your work. I love your podcast with Locked On 49ers. So I'm just trying to keep up, man.
You can't set me up like that. I can't follow that. So now I'm just here. I'm just Ben.
I can't either, man. That's like way, that's way more credit than I've really ever been given, to be honest with you.
Big day, big day.
I wish my dad would give me that kind of love, but we'll work through that stuff later.
It's going to be a therapy session, okay?
Yeah.
Hey, 49ers fans need a therapy session right now coming into this thing at 0-7. Obviously, very different situation for the Philadelphia Eagles. And man, that Monday night game really almost kind of scared me a little bit.
Yeah, it was... It got off to a rough start, man. And I think Eagles Twitter, as much as they're cannibalizing themselves today over the Peters and Hicks injuries, they were really starting to cannibalize the refs after we got four straight penalties coming off the heels of that crazy 126 yards to 1 yard penalty game against the Carolina Panthers. So there were some issues there. The sideline was dead for the first quarter. We showed the ability to be a mentally tough team, get over some adversity, stop, you know, making excuses and get the job done. And when we were clicking, man, boy, we beat the tar out of them. So that was encouraging.
Yeah, and you guys got to be pretty hyped for what looks to be set up to be a pretty good situation there for a long time with a second-year quarterback who's really just starting to take off. Was that Carson Wentz's best game as a pro on Monday Night Football?
Oh, most definitely. And he's it's funny you asked that question because I've always been a little bit on the bearish side when it comes to Carson as far as a pre-draft evaluation goes, so on and so forth. So I've always tried to be a little bit more tepid in my takes as compared to some other Philly fans. But he's in the best stretch of his career. Past three games, as far as Arizona goes, this Washington game, and then the Carolina game, those three games, best football he's played. He's got 11 touchdowns to two interceptions. Completion percentages as high as we've ever seen it. He's in control of that offense. Yeah, he's as hot as he's ever been. And so, you know, you're seeing the best football Carson Wentz is going to put out this Sunday against the Niners.
You know, I have questions about how he's developed because pre-draft stuff for me, I was not sure. And the 49ers were drafting 7 in 2016. And I was thinking, man, I kind of like Goff there, but I'm not sure if I'm completely sold on Wentz versus some of the elite defenders that were in that draft. And, you know, when you're looking at a pre-draft, who might fall there? And then when the Eagles and the Rams both traded way up and spent so much draft stock to move up and get those quarterbacks, I was thinking, oh man, I'm definitely out on that, because I was kind of like, you know, maybe at 7, okay. And then when they moved up, it was like, geez. And Goff obviously had a terrible rookie year, but Wentz started off with a bang. And I think maybe at the end of the season, it wasn't quite as good. Maybe when people had a book on him a little bit, but now it's looking like fantastic moves, because it's really, there's not too much you can give up if you do get your franchise quarterback.
Right. I mean, looking back at it, it looks fantastic. And the Browns saying, you know, he's not a top 20 guy or he's not a franchise quarterback looks pretty bad in their case right now with the situation they've got going on with Hugh Jackson and DeShone Kizer, which is a rehash of Kizer at Notre Dame with Brian Kelly. But look, as a draft community, and me and Ben are big into the draft, we tend to obsess over what a player is. And what Carson Wentz was at that time at North Dakota State was a raw prospect that you knew was going to take some time. And the plan was to sit him until Teddy Bridgewater goes down. We trade Sam Bradford, and now he gets pushed in to play, which, like I said, wasn't the plan. There were some things to fix, and those are things that got worked on the offseason. You don't always see those things fixed, because when you get into the live fire, you tend to revert back to what you know. That looping, you know, throw, his release is much quicker now. His feet are more active. He's more ready to throw. So there are a lot of things that he cleaned up. You don't necessarily know that's going to happen, but when you have a guy like Carson, who is a hard worker, who's a smart guy, you have a higher chance of that happening, and that only comes from knowing him as a person. That's something that we as a draft community don't necessarily get to see and be as confident in.
That's a great point, and that's the thing that's always left out for me, too, when I'm evaluating draft stuff. And, yeah, you don't get that face-to-face, that meeting. And I'm sure there's been GMs that sat across from a prospect that they thought they liked, and they talked to him for 10 minutes at the combine, and they look at each other in the draft room, and they're like, nope, we're not bringing that guy into our locker room. And I'm sure, you know, on the flip side of that, someone like Carson Wentz, when you have that raw talent that he had to work with his size and athleticism and his arm, and when you're also a leader on top of that, and you really can believe in a guy, I mean, that's a ton to work with. And that's something, yeah, as draft nicks, you don't really get a chance to get to know a player and know all that kind of stuff. One of the things that I wasn't sure about with Wentz coming out is he really stared down his first read a lot at North Dakota State. And I was thinking, man, is he, you know, is he going to be a guy that can mentally, you know, process things quickly and get in and out of his reads quickly and run an NFL offense officially early in his career? And man, I think he's aced that test, right?
He's still staring down first reads. He's still
is he? Okay.
Oh no. See, the thing you get about Carson is he's got the arm where he can put the ball in some tight windows and he'll stare down his first read and then just chuck the football in there. He's got a cannon. And so, you know, that kind of solves that problem. But yeah, there's more than a few plays when you go back to the All-22 where you want to be like, hey man, just look to the other side of the field and there's a wide open dude and you can hit him if you want to, you know. So that's still one of his problems. Now, and on the other side of this, and I've kind of been talking about this and I wrote about it, what Doug Peterson is doing with Carson Wentz is truly where the magic is, because Peterson has sculpted such an offense with so many versatile pass-catching weapons. Obviously, Darren Sproles has the injury, but you've got Nelson Aguilar, who's very dangerous in the slot as a wide receiver. He's experienced a resurgence there. Zach Ertz is playing better than any tight end right now in the NFL. You've got Alshon Jeffrey, who's a dangerous guy on the boundary. And then, as San Francisco fans will know, Torrey Smith has got the speed to take you out over the top. So with all these weapons, Doug Peterson's really doing a good job in opening up Carson's first read schematically, right? If your quarterback isn't good at moving off the first read, we'll call good plays to get his first read open a lot of the time. You know, you got to sculpt the offense to the way that he plays. And so Carson does have that magical, you know, creator's ability where he can scramble and direct guys and make plays. Working naturally through progressions, he isn't as strong, but the Eagles' offense clicks. And when it clicks, that first read's always open.
Yeah, Zach Ertz, it hurts to hear you talk about him because he was someone Stanford. I really liked coming out of Stanford. Yeah, and through the draft process, the 49ers, I believe, had the 34th pick early in the second round that year. Mm-hmm. And I was really hoping for Ertz there. They ended up trading down, and they traded around a few times in the second round, and it ended up with Tank Carradine and Vance McDonald. So they really didn't. They kind of whiffed on both of those.
You know, ever since I started this podcast, people have been asking me for advice, and usually it's what team to bet on this week, whether it's Steelers against Patriots or Bears against the Lions. Well, let me tell you this. Where you're betting at is just as important as who you're betting on, and that's why I always tell people to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been in this business for years, and their rep is rock solid. They do 100% cash bonuses, so off the bat, you're making money for doing nothing, and they have the fastest payout. Seriously, it's just two business days. Lay down some cash and win big today. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. That's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and an all-new mobile site that makes wagering on the go an absolute breeze. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit with up to 100% bonus. Use promo code LOEagles, that's LOEagles, to activate your offer. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid.
But yeah, so Zach Ertz, and Zach Ertz is playing probably his best ball at this point as well, isn't he?
Yeah, he's been amazing, and we talked about this. We talk about this all the time on Locked On Eagles, and I put a piece on LockedOnEagles.com about the way that they're using Ertz, the way that they're scheming him open. They're able to isolate him with spacing concepts on a matchup they really like. You saw it last week with Swearinger. You saw it against the Cardinals with Tyvon Branch. You see it week after week, us designing this offense to get him in space. He looks much cleaner as a route runner. He's using his strength at the break point, and he's really had a breakthrough season, whereas before, he would hit the ground running, you know, slow, and it would take him a while to kind of acclimate the things. And like at week 17 last year against the Dallas Cowboys, he had 13 catches over 100 yards and 2 touchdowns. We didn't see that all season from him. We're seeing that type of production from him early this season. It's making this offense just be way more explosive.
Yeah, and just all the other weapons that they put together, and just Aguilar taking the next step, and just everything coming together for the Eagles. And I'm worried the 49ers are really running into a buzzsaw here. And going across the country is always difficult. 10 a.m. start time in Philly. And yeah,
I had a question for you, Brian, because on the topic of Ertz, I've noticed when I watch the 49ers that Eric Reed is playing a lot of linebacker. What is the match? How are you guys going to try to match up with Ertz? Is it going to be Reed or is it going to be someone else? Because typically he ends up on a safety. Could it be Tart? Could it be Ward? Like who would you imagine the 49ers are going to try to counter with?
I would say most likely in order, and it looked like Reed was practicing more at linebacker again this week. And depending on how often the Eagles spread it out, it's kind of more like an extra safety on the field, like a dime linebacker anyways. So it's not necessarily a true linebacker. So it's not like they're really trying to fit a round peg into a square hole with Eric Reed. But most likely Tart is the most likely guy they're going to see at strong safety. He's been on tight ends a lot and he's had a really good season. It's definitely going to see a lot of Jimmy Ward, you know, in that deep middle of the field, and then some Reuben Foster and Eric Reed for sure as well. So those are probably the most likely guys they're going to see. Maybe if he splits out in the slot, might see some Kiwan Williams in the slot, but most likely I would say Tart, Reed, Foster, and then a little bit of Ward in that order. But Ward's going to be more deep safety guy, so you know if he's hitting that area of the field. But really where the 49ers that have been getting hit is on the outsides with their corners this season.
Yeah, Rashard Robinson has been a bit handsy down the field, but a bit hands-off at the line. So, yeah, I definitely understand that. Real quick on Foster, because I loved him coming out. He was my second-ranked prospect behind Myles Garrett, but he has exited two games out of the last two games he's played. What is his health situation right now coming into this game?
Yeah, and he's got some bruised ribs from the last game, and so it's just continually getting banged up. And you hope it doesn't continue to be a theme for him, but it was something that dogged him out of college as well. But I love Reuben Foster. He flies around. I think he might have benefited from playing a little bit more with Navarro Bowman, but Bowman's gone now, so it's his show. And they've moved him to the middle, and he's the middle linebacker of the now and future. And it looks like he's going to play. He was cleared to get back in the game last week, but they were getting blown out, so they just held him out and you know, did all the tests. And luckily, it wasn't broken ribs. It was just bruised ribs. So he should be good to go, and they'll probably hold him out of practice throughout the week as much as they can. But he'll be in there, I'm guessing, on Sunday.
So let's round out the picture of this defense then, because you brought up that seventh overall pick that y'all had in 2016, maybe a quarterback there, but that becomes DeForest Buckner, right? And DeForest Buckner's an animal. He's always been just a straight beast. And now you've got a new defensive coordinator there in San Francisco, Robert Saleh. I'm not sure how to say his name. I'm going to move on. But and that's a unique system there. That's kind of the system that was popularized by Gus Bradley when he was the defensive coordinator in Seattle and then in Jacksonville. And so I'm wondering, there was a lot of questions preseason about how some of those pieces. You've got Solomon Thomas, the rookie this year. You had Eric Armstead, of course, before he was injured. Kind of how those pieces have been deployed for you guys in the front seven. And obviously, you know, 49ers 0-7 haven't been having too much success in the win-loss column. But have you seen flashes from that defense that make you think that this system will work with these players?
And I'm also going to add on that real quick. Who's playing Leo for you guys? And do you think that's a fit right now?
Leo is a problem going forward. Right now on passing downs, though, it's Elvis Dumervil coming in and rushing from the Leo spot. But it was, to start the season, it was Eric Armstead. He was a little bit out of position. There was some redundancy for sure with those three first-round picks in a row with Solomon Thomas and Eric Armstead. And they're both more strong-side defensive ends on base downs in this system. And now that Armstead out, you know, it's just going to be Solomon Thomas there. He's playing base end, and then he's kicking inside and rushing from a defensive tackle position. And with DeForest Buckner, yeah, he's been a monster. I think he's still the second-rated interior defensive lineman in the NFL from Pro Football Focus. So he's been awesome, and he was more built to be that 3-4 defensive end, which is what they drafted him for. And so I was worried that, you know, just with his length being 6'7", that pad level might be a problem with him kicking inside. But it just doesn't matter because, like you said, he's such a monster and he's been amazing. He just swims on everybody and he can beat guys and he keeps coming too. So he's got the motor on top of being just a beast, and he's been outstanding. So, and the defensive line has really been the strength of this team. And I think the safety play is the next strength so far for the 49ers this season and going forward. But, you know, they have had some injuries now on the defensive line, and Aaron Lynch was out and Eric Armstead's out. So it's starting to get a little bit thin there along the defensive line. But long term, yeah, it's Solomon Thomas, strong side end, who moves inside to rush. And then that three tech is DeForest Buckner, who's just been a stud.
Yeah, and your safety group producing is going to be good for my brand because I was big on Jimmy Ward. I really liked Tart coming out. When they took him in the second round, I was like, are you kidding me? I really wanted him in Philadelphia. Also a big Lorenzo Jerome fan after he tanked at the Combine. Still a fan of his. Loved his tape. So let's transition to what third down looks like, because as you know, it's been a boon for Philadelphia on third down. The first in the league, converting 50.5% of the time. You guys are 31st on defense, 49.5%. And then you flip it, San Francisco 29th. On offense with 33.7, and the Eagles are fourth on defense with 32.9. What has been, because you mentioned the outside corners earlier, has that been the downfall as far as the 49ers defense on third down?
Yeah, and in this cover three scheme, a lot of teams are definitely attacking that seam, you know, but you know, the triangle between the single high safety and the corner and the linebacker right there. And they've hit a lot of those, you know, deep dig routes and things like that. But then even aside from that, just And this is where a question, and by the way, it's Robert Saleh is how you pronounce his name. Yeah. And so the guys on the outside have done a terrible job. And it almost at this point seems like they're getting coached to not press when they're in press coverage. It's kind of mind-boggling how little they get their hands and alter receivers' routes. And so they give them, you know, a free go off the line. And the idea is, you know, to carry them deep and play the boundary with the corners and then, you know, let them go inside where the teeth of the defense is. But yeah, basically on whether it's first down or third down, it's been the outside corners is where they've really been hurt. And Kawan Williams has had a tough go. Teams have really attacked him out of the slot as well on third downs. Even to me, I think it's just a tougher job to be a slot cornerback in the NFL. So I don't think it's necessarily him doing a terrible job. I think it's just that's where teams try to go in this era of football. But really, it's the guys on the outside, and they'll kind of interchange every other week. Dante Johnson or Rashard Robinson has a pretty good game, and then the other guy's bad, and then they switch off, and then now Robinson's had a few bad games in a row, but he's just been really terrible. Not only so at the line, not getting a jam on the guys, and then when he's down the field and the ball's in the air, either doesn't turn to find the ball, can't find it, gets handsy, grabs guys, and if he has a chance to make the play, he doesn't have very good hands either. So he's been really a mess, and a lot of it I think is technique-wise, and so that's why I kind of question the coaching staff there. And like, what's going on? You want to see some development there, and it really has been the opposite for Rashard Robinson. But now we're starting to see the rookie third-rounder Akella Witherspoon, who's another super skinny, long, lean corner, get a little bit more playing time, and we might see that continue as bad as Rashard Robinson is playing. But I'm sure it's going to be Robinson and Dante Johnson, the starters on the outside, and it's been definitely the weakness of this team.
All right. So I guess that leads me into, you've got a new general manager, you've got a new head coach, and you got an 0-7 start, but you've been very competitive in a lot of those games, you know, talking about the rookie pieces that you have and seeing how much they can play, you know, increase snaps for Witherspoon. Just what's the general feeling in San Francisco? How are fans thinking about this team? Do they trust this front office? Do they trust the coaching staff? What's the vibe there? What sort of a team is coming in here to Philadelphia?
Well, I think before last week, even at 0-6, and you know, five of those games were decided with 3 points or less. So I think the vibe was good, and I think it's still okay. But teams were really bummed out by that last game, especially because it's the Cowboys, and that's a team I'm sure, like Eagles fans, that's a team the 49ers fans really want to beat. Mm-hmm. And they came, you know, and they came into your house and they beat you and they just thump you 40-10. A lot of fans were frustrated. So I think just erasing that memory with another week of play and maybe playing the Eagles, who this looks like, you know, a scheduled loss at this point with the way these teams are going and going across the country. But just playing the Eagles close like they had been earlier in the season and making a game of it and being a competitive team while the team develops, I think is all you can ask for as a 49ers fan going into this week 8 matchup. But overall, the vibe has been great. Fans almost unanimously have loved Kyle Shanahan and loved John Lynch from the very start, and just how forthright John Lynch is too, because he's so much different than Trent Baalke was. The era before was just so bad, and how honest he is and straight up these guys have been, I think that's been refreshing for 49ers fans as well.
Yeah, Brian, we have been hammering you with questions. Is there anything from an Eagles standpoint that you want your locked on 49ers fans to get from us maybe?
Yeah, well, I think I want you to warn 49ers fans and maybe CJ Beathard about that pass rush of the Eagles, because I mean, there's a ton of guys. I know a lot of 49ers fans really liked Derek Barnett in the draft too. So talk a little bit about, you know, Graham and Barnett and just that pass rush up front for the Eagles.
Yeah, it's funny because you got to kind of pick what you fear most about the Eagles pass rush. You can be more afraid of their top tier guys as far as Brandon Graham and Fletcher Cox go, or you can be more afraid of the depth. And, you know, watching the Eagles, I think it's the depth that's the most fearsome thing. They're willing to rotate about, I would say, up to 8 guys on that front four, you know, 2 straight sets of just dangerous players with pass rush potential. What you'll see a lot from Philadelphia is if they get you into a clear passing down on third down, they're going to put 1 defensive tackle and 3 defensive ends out there. They'll leave Fletcher Cox somewhere in the interior. They'll move either Brandon Graham or Vinny Curry, one of their starting defensive ends, down into a 3 tech, and then they'll leave the opposite one and Derek Barnett or Chris Long on the outside. That's straight speed. I mean, Fletcher Cox is the fastest man alive, weighs more than 300 pounds, I'm positive. And then the 3 defensive ends are just, you know, they're pure pass rushers, and you've got them isolated against a guard and everything. The Eagles will show some potential blitzers up the gap. You know, they'll show a linebacker coming off the edge. The entire goal is to get one of their guys, and you don't know who, it's to get one of their guys one-on-one. And if he's one-on-one in space, our front four pass rushers cause everybody problems. You know, you had all pro left tackles and guards in Washington last week, and they were still having fits. You know, this Eagles pass rush is about as good as it comes. Now, you won't see too many blitzes. They sometimes blitz on second down, but understand if you're in a third and long situation, Jim Schwartz has gotten so creative, the defensive coordinator. He's really gotten smart figuring out how to get those one-on-one matchups, those advantageous looks. And yeah, you don't see the sack numbers from this team because of how quick the ball will come out against them, which has a little bit to do with the injuries at corner. But yeah, this pass rush is something else.
Hey, real quick, why is Raheem Mostert replacing Victor Bolden Jr. as your kick returner when Bolden blew up in the preseason, if I'm not mistaken, in the return game, and Mostert was with the Eagles before, so treat him well. Speak well of him, because you're going to have a lot of Eagles fans hearing this, but what do you think about that situation there real quick before we get into the predictions and whatnot?
Yeah, no, I was very surprised when I saw Mostert back there returning the kicks because, like you said, Bolden was awesome in the preseason and even in short stints here in the regular season as a kick returner. I think it was just a numbers situation at running back because Mostert's the third running back, and so you got to have three backs there. And so they knew he can return kicks, and so they, you know, they had another player instead of Bolden active on the roster. But I want to see Victor Bolden back there because I've loved him. He's been dynamic as a kick returner. I love the way he attacks. You know, he just goes for it. He returns the way you want to see a returner go. You're fearless, finds his hole, hits it hard, no dancing, no BS. Yeah, I've really liked Victor Bolden quite a bit, and I hope he is active this week, and it goes back to the kick returning duties. But I think it's just, you know, just having some depth issues on the defensive line, and they just needed enough players with some of the injuries they had to cover other positions. And since Mostert could return kicks, I think that's why Bolden wasn't active. But if Bolden's active, he's the guy as a kick returner for sure.
Let's get into some predictions, man. Brian, hit us with it.
Let's see here. Well, what was the line again?
So we got Eagles are 13 points favorite. Over-under is set at 46 points.
And that's from the mybookie.ag site?
Yes, sir.
Awesome.
Yes, mybookie.ag. That's right. So let's see. Minus 13. I mean, that's a big number to throw out there. And last week, I think it was minus 6 only against the Cowboys. And that was something that I was thinking once Zeke Elliott came back that line was going to move a lot. And it didn't even move that much. But, you know, seeing how they played against the Cowboys – going on the road, I think that's a fair line, minus 13. But the 49ers have covered, I think, 4 out of 7 weeks. I think they're 4-3 against the spread now. And so I think that the 49ers, if they, you know, if last week was the anomaly and they're able to play like they had been earlier in the season and play hard and play close, I think they can get it. They can keep it within 13 points. So I might go 49ers against the spread there, but that's not, I don't think that's too many points either.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if you see the 49ers outside of that spread and grab a backdoor cover, simply because I think that Kyle Shanahan's going to be able to generate some offense against an Eagles defense that's good but banged up, you know, still looking to get a few pieces back. Obviously just lost their captain in middle linebacker Jordan Hicks. And yeah, the 49ers have played good teams competitive. You know, the Dallas game it was a bad one, but y'all played the Redskins tough, y'all played the Rams tough, y'all played the Seahawks tough. You know, this is a team that fights. And so Philadelphia also has done a really poor job this year putting away games. They give up a lot of points in the fourth quarter. You know, they let the Giants sneak back into things, they let the Chargers sneak back into things. They haven't, you know, they've only covered a double digit spread twice, you know. So I don't foresee the Eagles, you know, necessarily being too threatened by the 49ers across the course of the game, but I do think the 49ers will be able to hang within 13.
And what about that over or the over under? I'm thinking over on the 46.
So my bookie has it at 46 for the over. Okay, I'll go with my score prediction, and that'll kind of decide what I'm thinking here. I've got it as the Eagles coming out hot like they typically do. That Redskins game was a bit of an anomaly. We score really quick for the most part. We scheme things up coming into it. I think we get up, which kind of limits the run game for the 49ers, what they can do with it. I don't think Beathard is going to be a guy that's going to kill you all game, you know, through the air. He can obviously do some stuff with his feet and whatnot, but I mean, they kind of struggled in the red zone last week getting points out of it. So I'm going to go 31-14, and that would put me right at 45. So I've got the under if we're betting the over-under on my bookie.
Oh, okay. You know, actually, and that reminds me of something I wanted to ask real quick. So you mentioned the pass rush earlier, but saying that there was some problems at corner and now Jordan Hicks is out. If the 49ers were, you know, if this kind of was, like you said, in shootout mode where the 49ers had to fire back right away, if, you know, if the Eagles come out early and score some points, and that's where I think it could end up being over if the 49ers are forced to go into that mode early, because I think they would prefer to kind of run the ball, even though they haven't been able to really that much this season because they've been behind a lot. Right. And I think that's why, you know, it's been over for more times than I think you would think going in with that offense. But what can the 49ers scheme up on offense, and who are they attacking on the Eagles' defense if they were to put up some points on Philly?
Yeah, so first thing you got to do is you got to be able to run the football a little successfully, because the Eagles will want to play you in too high. I think just looking at the 49ers defense, the 49ers offense, they haven't played a lot of too high this year, but I think they're going to believe that they can stop, you know, just with a regular sized box. And so if you can start to generate a little bit of a run game, and like Mike mentioned, Beathard can do a little bit with his legs, now you're forcing Malcolm Jenkins to come up. You're going to force some single high coverage, and that's where you can really start to attack, because now you've got a big responsibility for that middle linebacker playing middle of the field, kind of the intermediate area, and now you might have deep third responsibilities for the two corners, Rasul Douglas and Jalen Mills. Obviously, two young corners. Mills is a second year. Rasul Douglas is a rookie, but neither of them really starter potential. They've kind of been pushed into starter roles because of injuries. And so if Philly can stay in too high and keep those corners in the flat zones, because you're not running the football, it's going to be tough to throw it on them, because Jenkins and McLeod are two fantastic safeties there, and they've got less responsibility. If you can force Jenkins up into the box where they move him a lot, especially if you're running the football well, now you can throw it down the field.
So if you're looking at this from a fantasy perspective, and the 49ers get in the hole early and have to throw, and being that C.J. Beathard was really king on someone you guys are familiar playing against in Pierre Garçon. So do you think Pierre Garçon is someone that you might want to be starting in your fantasy leagues this week?
Garçon is in a smash spot, so to speak. It's going to be a positive game script for him, in my opinion. And we don't have the corners to cover him on a play-by-play basis. He's going to be able to get it short. He's going to be able to get it intermediate pretty much all day, however he wants it. You know what I mean?
And he always destroys the Philadelphia Eagles, categorically, especially late. Like, if it's a one-possession game late, Pierre Garçon scoring a touchdown.
Yeah, I have a good friend who is a Cowboys fan, and he immediately, when the 49ers signed Pierre Garçon, he's like, "Oh, I hate that guy so much." And I was like, "Yes, I know for sure that was an amazing signing then, if my Cowboys fan hates him."
That's exactly how it works. Yeah, absolutely, dude. Brian, absolute pleasure talking with you. I'm so taken aback by the knowledge you've been dropping, I can't even speak.
So you butter me up on the way in and the way out. Okay, I like this. I should talk to you guys more often. This is awesome.
It's the only reason why Ben sticks around. I treat him so well over on Lockdown Eagles.
Okay.
So since there's two hosts for your show, who's officially the host and who's officially the co-host? Or is this just a straight-up partnership here between the two of you guys?
Ben is the best co-host in the game. That's how I'll put it. When I got the big chair from David, my first choice for co-host was Benjamin Solak. There wasn't a second choice, and I was lucky that Ben said yes, because doing it by myself was a terrible, terrible challenge, and Ben is a positive dude that keeps me on the sunny side of things every day.
He wrote Ben Solak or nothing on a little piece of paper, folded up,
slipped it
on over to me. No matter what. Yeah, exactly.
Nice. Well, yeah, I'm glad it's working out for you guys. You're right. Yeah, it can be a grind doing it solo. I do have Nick Winkler, who was my co-host on an old podcast that we did weekly. He still comes on with me once a week on Wednesdays. But yeah, it's sometimes rough, sometimes a grind doing it solo, but it's been fun as well. And I've been pretty pumped to be part of the Locked On Podcast Network and being hooked up with folks like you and seeing the growth so far in all the shows in the network as a whole. So it's been awesome. And I really appreciate you guys coming on the show, on my show, and thankful that you guys had me on your show to do this crossover episode. It's been awesome.
Absolutely, dude. It's been a blast. I'm going to hit my closing slogan. You can hit yours right after, man. Keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.
That's fantastic. That's a good. I'm not even going to let you guys hear how I close my show out. I'm going to do it without you.